Yo, BJ Gador with the BJ Gador podcast, and I have with me today, man, maybe the most famous person in fitness. All right, she was Phoenix on the American Gladiators reboot, my favorite gladiator of all time. She was also a winning Biggest Loser trainer when it was actually a real show on NBC and not a USA offshoot, shade intended. All right. She's one of the most fit people I've ever known and met. Also one of the most lovely human beings on the face of the fucking planet. Can I do a better intro than what I'm doing right now? By the way, what they should have done with the remake, it should have been that like, dun, 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 and then a trap beat would have came in like, dun, 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 dun,
you know, like, I mean, first of all, trap beat. Your pitch is on, everything's going so well. I just immediately got insecure because I was like, people are going to think, oh, it's going to be Zap or Nitro or Blaze or Gemini, like one of like a real gladiators. And I'm kind of like fake real. I was the reboot. So I don't know if it qualifies, but it really made me feel really good, BJ.
You can't handle when you're born. Like if you were born at a time when you came of age with that, you would have been a, like, and again, you are a global superstar. You found your own way through it eventually anyway. But, you know, let's start with something that's not necessarily fitness related, but it's going on right now at the time of recording this. What are your thoughts on this missing submarine, the size of, it looks like a pill bottle, and it's gone down to the Titanic wreckage and no one knows what's going on?
You know, I'm overwhelmed for them because it's one of those situations you're like, wait, how can you not find it? And then you think, wow, it's like a pretty big ass ocean. You know what I mean? And then I think, what would I immediately think about? How are they organizing in that missing sub to stretch out that air and to create noise down at that sea bottom, that sea floor, or wherever they're at to try to get picked up? Like, all I'm thinking about was what they're doing to survive. And who's leading that? Are they panicking? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of overwhelmed. And every time I see an update, it's like 2 days of air, 40 hours of air, you know, and they're just, so I'm spinning is, I guess, if you can't tell already, I'm spinning over what's going on down there.
I mean, I've seen photos of what it looks like inside there. I mean, you couldn't get me inside that thing if it was on land.
No. Well, it was like a little research pod vessel. So it's like, I mean, there's a guy with his son in there. Like, they obviously are in pursuit of this, this exploratory wreckage with the Titanic, which, by the way, I had no idea the Titanic was so close to America when they hit. I had no idea. Like, when you see where the wreckage is just off the coast of kind of like the northern, northeast part of North America, and I'm like, well, obviously they felt it was really safe. So something fluke had to happen, or it's alien or sea monster. Like, I am so, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but it doesn't make sense. It's not adding up that we can't find it. And every fleet within reach is looking for them and can't find them.
And this is, I mean, there's a couple key stats that popped out to me. And again, like, I'm not a big news person, but I like to keep up with the headlines. It helps me inform content.
Who do you follow, by the way? Where do you get your news from?
I get the Apple News updates.
I highly recommend BBC. Just like, it's nice to look at foreign news sources or news channels that are unbiased and kind of feeding us just direct intel versus some of our own internal news coverage. Just want to throw that out. Okay, keep going.
Okay. I just wrote it down on my little notepad.
BBC's great. Yep.
With my little pencil. I'm like a little schoolboy these days with a little notepad and pencil.
I hope it's a number two that you hand sharpen.
You know, I do use the electric sharpener though. It's just so quick and beautiful.
Bzzz.
Perfect. That's every time. I'm not great with my hands. When I use the hand one, I tend to break the pencil. I'm just, you know, God, I don't really know my strength.
How's your wife feel about that? Not good with your hands, BJ.
Well, I mean, you know, in certain scenarios.
Ah, okay.
When it comes to small, thin objects. How about that? Without getting too specific. But there's other things besides the hands, though, I've heard. I mean, that's what I've been told.
Yeah, so there are.
Here's one thing. 400 times the pressure at the bottom of the ocean as the surface. I mean, someone was saying that, like, you know, rockets explode, but when you go into deep waters, you implode. Just that visual of just the pressure. Again, we hope they're okay. I don't know how they're going to find them in this vast ocean space. And again, apparently it's like, it's so dirty, muddy, uneven, and just cold down there that if they can even find them, it just seems to be an impossible rescue effort. In the build of this particular model, they don't even have a latch on there that someone could attach to pull them back up. And it's operated by a video game controller.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it just sounds like it was a death wish. And the other thing that was, go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, I just said, I saw the article, it was the BBC, and they said how now that you're digging into the model of the actual, the ship, I'll call it the sub, that there was like warnings around it. And of course it always comes out when there's an issue, but now that they've dug in further, like, well, there's a lot of safety protocols that are not being met. And you're probably listing a few of them, just like the no latch, like, okay, we get there. They've got, you know, 5 hours of air. How do we get them to surface? Like, how do we actually execute a rescue? How can we get them out? I mean, without under that pressure, without any towing ability, without any control.
I did see a statement, a really tone-deaf statement from one of the representatives of this company. And their claim was, our whole goal is we're trying to democratize deep sea travel. Though this is a $250,000 trip. That would take some people, I guess the average income in America, it would take 10 years to accumulate the wealth and pure profit to be able to do this voyage. They're democratizing deep sea travel. That kind of blew me away.
So you're giving me another layer of this that I didn't realize. So you're saying this was a recreational dive?
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy in there. That's another crazy thing about it too. There's the guy
from Sweden, or the Danish guy.
I think so. He's like a leading Titanic expert, and it's like, yes, his 40th dive. And I'm like, you're going down. First of all, there is an amazing 3D rendering video of this. I can save you the trip. I can save you the headaches. You're going to get the best, because even you get down there, I'm not even sure if they have a window. And if they do, the vision in deep waters is apparently terrible. But this technology they had to get this 3D rendering, you can see it in its beautiful wreckage safely in the comfort of your own home.
And unfortunately, I immediately, especially someone that lives in Los Angeles, my mind tacks onto the Kobe Bryant helicopter crash. Because you once again had a fan, you know, dads and their daughters or their kids flying on a day recreationally that no one should have been in the air. And that's been agreed upon across the board. And of course, it's such a terrible loss and incident for so many families. But like, why are we on helicopters? I don't need to be in a helicopter. I used Uber the other day and it says, hey, do you want to use Blade? And I was immediately thinking Wesley Snipes, a vampire movie. Blade is a helicopter Uber service that if I want to take a helicopter to the airport or somewhere. And I thought, going back to this democratizing of these modes, I don't see, like, why? Why blow the money? Why jeopardize safety? Why? I mean, I don't know. I'm failing to understand the point, I guess.
I don't know. You know, again, the first thing a skeptic might say, or a cynic like me, is like, I guess your life isn't hard enough. You got to create some some situations to make it more difficult. But again, like, I don't want to minimize the particular, like, this is a nightmare. This is an absolute nightmare.
I just was thinking, gosh, maybe the dad and son, like maybe the son was just really interested in becoming like doing like deep sea science work. And this was his opportunity to get in there with this leading scientist for these wrecks. And, you know, you don't know the stories. And it's like a devastating, it's a devastating circumstance. And it feels like a movie. It feels like The Abyss. It feels, you know what I mean? Like something that, like, I'm kind of waiting for the movie to end and get people get rescued. And I'm every time, I mean, I've been on my phone more today than any other day this year, just looking for updates, waiting for the happy ending. And I'm overwhelmed for their families and I'm overwhelmed for the whole thing. And I obviously dives like this happen all the time. We do it in our military. We're doing it. I mean, it's happening, right? This is, I think, commonplace. But when you have a situation, it may be like the 1 in 1 million, but it's no less, as you said, devastating.
Unbelievable. And obviously it's everywhere right now. So best of wishes to them. And I guess big takeaway, I don't know, like stay home.
Well, God, maybe, but I don't agree with that either, BJ. Like that's, you know what I mean? You gotta live life. Like I could get hurt crossing the street. I can get hit by a cab. I'm in New York right now. You know, you just can't live limited, but I just don't know if I'd go to the Titanic, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we're not like saying, you know, you're taking a yacht for a weekend getaway here. We're talking about going to places man was arguably never meant to be, mankind, humankind. But anyway, let's pivot because it's basically great news. Let's go back to the intro here, okay? The American Gladiators. Now, if you grew up, if you're a man, woman, or person,
if you have a beating heart,
yes, if you have a beat, if you live, especially during the 80s and 90s. This show, American Gladiators, like I used to watch, I knew what was going to happen in the reruns. I just could not stop watching this show. And they did a reboot, I think it was 2006, 7, 8.
2008. We only did two seasons in 2008. And that was it, dude. It was in and it was out.
Yeah, no. And I want to talk about that because, right. Well, so there's this ESPN documentary that just came out recently about this. It's a two-part documentary. If you're looking to save some time, part two is unnecessary, but part one is intriguing. But there's also, you told me there's this Netflix documentary.
Yeah. So we should dig in. Like, I only knew about the Netflix documentary because Dan Clark, who was like formerly like my, he is my hero still, but like, I was like, oh my God, it's Nitro. And he and I used to work out at the same CrossFit gym. And so he was like, when it came to Gladiators, it was Nitro and Zap and Blaze. Those were my favorites and I loved them. And he told me that they're doing this documentary and I was excited and I go on ESPN and I see the 30 for 30. I'm like, what is all this? I saw the second episode. It was a bunch of grown men whining and complaining. And everyone's like, watch the first episode, as you just suggested, because it tells you the origin of American Gladiators, which was really neat. And hearing like the unions and how those workers oriented the games and what that did for that community. And that was really fascinating to me. But the ESPN 30 for 30, I agree with you. Watch the first 30 minutes or the first episode. Skip the second one. The Netflix series is like 4 or 5 episodes of the actual show in the 80s. So it's like the golden days of Gladiators. It's all of the originals. You get like behind the scenes of what happened during the contest, how real it was, who was sleeping with who. You know, I mean, it's called Muscles and Mayhem, I think. I'm so excited for it. And like you, BJ, I grew up watching that show. I was an American Gladiator for Halloween probably 3 times as an adult. Like I was Wonder Woman twice, 2 or 3 times, Gladiator like 2 or 3 times. And so, of course, when the show, you know, gave me the opportunity to be a gladiator, I was like, hands down, this is my dream job. Yes. You know, so, I mean, if you grew up any point, like you said, in the 70s, if you were born in the 70s or 80s, this is a part of our DNA.
And this became this was a phenomenon. This was one of the most popular shows on television. Yes. It was syndicated globally. What was your opinion of the ESPN documentary from what you watched? Like, what was your big takeaway? I know you said it's these two old guys that
it was just nice to see. It was, I learned things I didn't know about how the games were formed. Like I said, all these workers unions, and they did it as almost like a camaraderie, as like a field day. And it was kind of, it generated into something much bigger. I just sounded like a story of, you know, young men having big egos of, it's my idea, it's my money, whatever. And it was actually kind of sad because you saw these like men really hanging on to past glory or past acknowledgement that was never given to them. And they just seemed like old, unhappy, and like in a lot of pain physically. You know what I mean? Like they just didn't seem good. Whereas you hear the gladiator stories with the Netflix, when you see that, like you just kind of hear the much brighter, shinier part of Gladiator. So I think 30 for 30 on ESPN, you see history and origin. And then when the Netflix documentary with all the, you know, the 80s and 90s gladiators is like the real fun, the real entertaining shit.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be more from the perspective of the gladiators.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Which is going to be exciting. But, you know, to give like some cliff notes, again, still watch part one if you're a fan of the American Gladiators. Because again, like you said, there's a lot of, I never knew the origin story. I never knew that it was supposed to be like a movie in the beginning, that it was like 6 or 7 years of legwork before it even became a concept, and yeah, only became a concept because of a writer's strike and they needed some quick, fast content up.
Yeah.
But it's essentially the story, one of the oldest stories in the books, an egomaniac with no actual ideas of his own, stealing someone's idea and then exploiting it for profit, cutting him out of, you know, cutting the original, like it was these like classic strongmen. They weren't welders. They were, what's that? I forget. I'm 40, so I forget things constantly now. The brain is just so full.
They were in a trade, though. They weren't iron. They weren't forgers or iron, but they were in trades. Like they were, I thought they were iron workers.
Yeah, it was something like that. And they basically were like so hardcore, they created their own games to compete to see who was toughest or fit. And again, it looked like a really cool concept. And it was called American Gladiators. And this guy was like around and he got like, apparently he's in the audience and someone said, I could watch this all day. And he's like, and there it was. And then he took the idea. He went to Hollywood and he won't stop. I'll give him the credit though. Like he took 6 or 7 years of his life.
Listen, Johnny Ferraro is the reason I got a job in Gladiators. Like he is someone that has a vision. You need people that have vision and have unwavering belief in themselves,
yes,
and in their ideas. And that's Johnny. Like you can say what you will, but like I struggle with self-belief. I struggle with pursuing things that I think are good ideas, but I'm like, oh, maybe no one's going to like them. I'll just stop. No one cares. No one wants to read my next book. Like, you know, Johnny's like, no, I'm the fucking best. And this is an amazing idea. I'm doing it. You know what I mean? Like, he's fuck you all. And he did. And he, out of just whether it was ego or drive or ambition, or just showing up everybody back home that I can do this, he didn't stop till he did it. And like, there's a lesson in that.
Oh, for sure. This guy is a total showman. I mean, he was an Elvis impersonator. He called himself the Prince of Rock and Roll. Actually legitimate looking Elvis. Like he looked
legit.
He looked the part.
I was like, literally when I met him, I don't know who he was. I was like, who's the Elvis guy? Like, I didn't know. I was bartending in Chicago and I got the job and I was like, I don't know who anybody is. Who's that guy?
So you actually met and spent some time with this gentleman.
Yeah.
And your take is that this guy is just, he's a genius in his lane.
Genius is a really strong word. I think he has vision. You know what I mean? But yeah. If ego for any human becomes larger than vision and larger than people, you lose out. And that's why, I mean, Gladiators was, ironically, fun fact, it was on the air back in the 80s, 90s because of the writer's strike. Guess what happened in 2008?
Writer's strike.
You bet. So Gladiators was birthed the second time out of the same conditions that it was originally born because it was a writer's strike. These networks are looking for TV fast. It's unscripted. It's a game show. They made it I don't know how cheap or expensive, but they were able to make it relatively quickly because they just threw us an arena and said, today you're doing this. Like today, when we did Atlas, I was like, I know Atlas because I was a mega fan, but I'd never been in one. So they let us all contestants and gladiators like take one like walk in it so we could feel the weight. And they're like, okay, you guys are on in an hour. You know, I was like, holy fuck, I better do good at this game because it's gonna be really boring if I can't move it. And they're like 600-700 pound atlases. So, you know, like there was no setup. But anyway, that's what got going because there was a writer's strike and we got out there. And then we did 2 seasons. It was one of the most number one shows watched in America. I would be stopped by families and kids everywhere because it was one of the few shows you could watch on television as a family. And Johnny and the network couldn't come to an agreement for the next season. And when it's a big deal. This show is doing everything you want it to do. You finally get the break and you can't come to a fucking agreement. And so we were all off the air. And what did NBC do? Say, fine, buy American Gladiators. We're going to make American Ninja Warrior. And they just used all the equipment. They said, we already have all the pads. We already have all the stuff. We'll just build a different course with it. And then American Ninja Warrior was born the next year. And they're like, and America didn't skip a beat. They're like, oh, cool. This show is cool too. You know?
Well, they took advantage of also the trends too. Like calisthenics and more of like parkour, obstacle course style stuff was more popular than like the WWF era of like mega muscular, strong people. Though again, like for my money, I preferred the American Gladiator venue. Just in terms of like, there's so much to unpack. Tell me about the tryout process. Like, so I'm assuming you had a talent agent and they're like, okay, there's this idea for you. Like how did this come into you?
I got lucky. I was the only, what I would consider, civilian gladiator. And what that means is that everybody else that was hired was somebody. Like we had a professional rodeo clown. Tunawai was and still is the stunt double for the Rock. Like a professional global stunt double, like doing that. Gina Carano, MMA fighter, one of the best in the league in that time. Like everybody was somebody major. And I was bartending in Chicago and I was not getting hired from a degree. I have a sports administration degree from the University of Kansas. No one gives a shit. I'm bartending and I'm doing random fitness modeling gigs for Optimum Nutrition. Remember ABB and Optimum?
Yes.
So I would like hold protein, do some lunges. And like to this day, my body is on their shipping trucks. And so what their casting directors were looking at fitness magazines, looking for people to like call in to cast. They found my picture, found my image, reached out to Optimum, asked for my email, got a hold of me. And I get this email saying, we think you got an awesome look. I should see if I have this email. And I immediately think, oh, I'm getting pranked by one of my friends. Cause I have really funny friends that would go to, that have time on their hands at this point. Like I was 24, you know? And I was like, I don't want to answer it cause I'll never live it down. And then I was like, but what if it's real? And I asked one of my friends, I'm like, are you guys fuck with me? He's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, Jen, seriously, swear on my life. Like, no. So I reach out, fast forward. I have to send them like a video of me like doing pull-ups and like I was doing gymnastics and I was like lifting weights and like anything that showed them I'm physically not like a dud. And then I had to do a video. And the funniest thing is this is before camera phones. Like the fall of 07. So like I have one of those video camera recorders, like a digital camera. And I'm talking about myself and the whole time it sounds like I'm talking with a lisp. The entire video, all of it sounds like I sound like that. I'm like, oh my God. So I send it and I go, I promise I don't have a lisp. I don't know why this has done this. Unless you want me to have a lisp and I'll have one. And then I attached a picture of me in my Halloween Zap costume. And I said, and I already have all the gear. So just, you know, so I just like poured it on thick. They call me, I go to LA. I go through all of these physical and like we do like drug testing. We do CO2 max testing. We do CO2, VO2 max testing. We do all this stuff. They do the psychology. We have to sit next to a therapist and take a test. And then they put us on the course. So the only events we got to practice was the wall, joust, and the rings. And the irony was that they really only had one girl, two girls maybe that were good at the rings are really tough if you don't have enough upper body strength. Like Gina Carano, she could like crush me like and joust or on the wrestling one or on pyramid, but she like couldn't do wall very well and she couldn't do rings. So they were looking for like strong but gymnastics-y people and that like happened to be me. And then they put me on a joust with Helga And I was like, I have to go against her. And I just remember BJ, I just like stood my ground. I was like, ah! Like I was fucking wailing and wailing until she started to cry and she fell off and she like stormed off set. And I was like, oh my God, good job. Because I was like, I'd never jousted before. Like I had pretended when I was a kid. But so anyway, I did end up just making it through. And by the end, they're like, can we call you Phoenix and dye your hair pink? I was like, yeah. And then they gave me my outfit, which was like the smallest of everybody's. I was like, I don't care. I get to, this is my dream job. Yes, yes, yes. So that was it, man. And, you know, I'll tell you, well, do you have anything to say or I can keep this rant going?
Well, I want you to continue. I guess an initial question is well, you brought up a couple of things. One was, I was surprised to hear about the drug test because apparently like they were talking about in the original Gladiators, like there were needles in the locker room, the amount of drugs that they were taking just to stay in the game. And also just the injuries, the concussions. And then Thunder, did you see what happened to Thunder?
I know. Well, here's what I want to point out, and I don't think any of the gladiators on the seasons on the reboot would argue with me, and I don't think they'd be angry at me either. We were like powder puff football, and the original gladiators were like full on rugby. You know what I mean? Like it was a very different level of physicality on our seasons. And part of that was because they, in my opinion, they added too many new games that really didn't work. And they were like, kind of like cool, but we did this ladder climbing one. We did it once. There was this up the sky track. We did it like once. There were just too many one-offs that were very easy to beat the contestants in. You know, even tug of war, a one-on-one. BJ, you're a strong, fit, healthy man with quads of a god. You, like Justice is a 300-pound, 7'2" guy. Like you're not going to beat him in tug of war. And so we put these contestants in positions that weren't winnable. And so we it wasn't that exciting. And so the contact opportunities were more limited. So Pyramid was super cool that we did Powerball, but we didn't do Breakthrough and Conquer. You know, we did, what's the one, maybe it's the Gauntlet where they have to run through that tunnel to get to the other side. That was a little bit physical, but not that, because we were separated by pads. Everything was so, like there was one we threw balls at them. Like we were not hand-to-hand combat like the original Gladiators. What they put their bodies through, like it was just a totally, totally different experience. And it was so much more unregulated. I mean, like this is 30 years later. You know what I mean? Like think about how uptight standards are now to do anything for as safety, for people suing you. So we just weren't head to head like the originals. So, I mean, I got knocked around a little bit, but like I had a couple bruises. Like honestly, the worst things I would get, because my outfit was like across my chest, girls' nails trying to scratch at me, they would scratch or they would try to rip my top off and miss and hit my skin, thinking if my boobs are out, because it's a live audience, that I'll let go of the rings or I'll let go of them. So the biggest injury I sustained was like nail marks. I was like, oh, you know, whatever. I got good boobs. I don't care. I'm not letting go. You know what I mean? The world can see them. But like that was the thing, like they were under so much more physical stress. And there were less gladiators. So you got to think of it too, while I'm on this rant, is it's like you having your starting lineup in a basketball game. You've got your five, and then let's say you've got a sixth and a seventh man, like to rotate in your players. Like that's all the originals had. We had like 12. So there would be days I would do one event and go home. There are days I would do three events, or it's just, we had so much more backup and so much more space with the contestants.
Who was your favorite male and female gladiator in the original series?
Nitro and Zap, it's hands down. Blaze is like a really, really close like second to them. Like, but and I love Gemini as well. Like, oh my God. Like Gemini was awesome. But Zap and as a child, Zap and Nitro, I couldn't get out of my head.
And Nitro wouldn't even participate in the 30 for 30 documentary.
Listen, Dan, I can call a dear friend. I was actually texting with him today. You should go to my social media. I just did a campy parody video about American Gladiators just with my friends over at the Ready State, Kelly and Juliet. And it's because it's just, we're just pepping it up, being excited about it. And I texted him and now that Dan is one of my friends, it's like, he's very smart. He's still a force. He's still a presence. He's so tall. He's still so muscular. He's limping a little bit, let me tell you. But you know, if he's not going to participate in something, it's for good reason.
So yeah, no, that spoke volumes for sure. You mentioned Gemini as well. And Gemini, he describes what was basically an identity crisis he went into, in terms of he kind of like lost his real name. He got lost touch with who he was really, and just kind of fell into just this Gemini identity and just couldn't get out of it. And it was just like so emotional, but also so committed to the process. What was the hardest event or hardest part of the production process for you when you were Gladiator?
I think for me, I'm grateful for like the 15 years of sports that I had in my corner, because I did gymnastics and I was a three sport athlete in high school. I did, you know, track and diving and gymnastics, and then I did Division I hammer throw. So this, you need to be able to perform under pressure, because there's no redo. There's no, oh, timeout, can I start the game over? I slipped. You get one shot to perform. And if you mess up, you lose it. That's embarrassing. That's just ego for you. Or two, you're really bad television. So I would see, we had gladiators that like would go on the rings and like couldn't quite, and like slipped and fell off on their own. And you're like, and that contestant just got to like loop across. And obviously post-production's able to say, we were doing you can watch four events live, but two events online. And they were just the events that didn't go well, they would push online. And so for me, the pressure was like, cause I joked that I was the most beatable gladiator, because I wasn't a professional anything. I was drunk most of the time. I was, like I said, I was bartending. I hadn't really worked out in years. And I was like, oh man, I better figure this out fast. And so performing and having the focus to compete paralleled with my producer saying, okay, Jen, we really could use XYZ from you. We need a funny joke. We need you to look beautiful up there. One of the times the producer goes, can you get her down from the ring? So I have to go back to back. So I have to go two in a row, because the contestants get to face the same gladiator, which is almost an advantage to the second contestant, because I'm a little more tired and there's not very much rest time. But my producer goes, can you get the first one down without going in the water? That would be really, really cool. So now I'm like, okay, now I got to not mess up, compete, be funny and pretty up there, get there, don't slip, don't wear out my grip, because I got another one, and I got to get it down before falling in. And there's this hilarious skit. I don't know if anyone could find it. I'm literally like dry humping this girl's face, because I'm trying to hold onto my rings and get her down. And I've got my feet around her shoulders trying to get her to let go. And finally I was standing on her shoulders and I shoved her down. But like Chelsea Handler did like slowed it down, put it to porn music and was calling it late night with American Gladiators. And I'm just like, I'm mortified and I'm smiling so big and the whole thing. Cause I'm like, I got her. I'm going to get her down. And then, you know, so, I mean, they thought it was absolutely hilarious, but like, I mean, embarrassing to this day. Yes. But like, I'm like, ah, fuck it. It's funny. I got her down and I got the second girl down, but like, it's a lot of pressure to perform, to compete, to think about what your face is doing, to think about if your boobs are out, like, and then still win and still follow all of production's requests. So, you know, and because the final thing, if I can complain for one more second, is you're sitting a lot. So I would, let's say, you know, we would do pyramid in the morning and we would run a few heats. And then while we were doing that, they set up, let's say, rings over the water. And so we're doing all these heats of rings while they're setting up the third event, let's say Powerball back where the pyramid was. So, I mean, you're sitting for hours and hours and hours, and then you go and then you wait an hour and then you go and then they reset it and you wait an hour. And so it was just like not wanting to get your muscles get cold. You didn't want to get injured. You also, it sounds funny, but like food was an issue. Cause like you want to eat and get a full meal, but you don't want to have a full belly when you're competing, not only cause you don't want to kind of be sleepy and groggy and you don't want your blood in your belly for digestion. You want it in your limbs to work, but also you don't want to be bloated on camera cause how many million people are tuning in and looking at you in your bikini outfit. So there were so many elements that made it kind of difficult, but like I had so much fun. I can't even, I mean, I would do it all again 10 times over.
It sounds like of all the gladiators, you were really the one that was just completely thrown into the fire.
For sure. Cause I came on the reboot. So they did a quick one in January and then quickly got us going. So I was season two. And frankly, cause I was a nobody, I was the cheapest. So people would have, I think had restrictions. Like they make X dollars for, you know, 8 hours a day. And I was like, I'll $2 for a full day. Sure. I'll do it. Like, you know, so I was kind of the fallback, but I didn't care. You know what I mean? I was like literally living my dream. So, and I met so many amazing people like Tanawai Reed, Gina Carano, Beth Horn, like all these people are still like dear people to me. Alex Castro, like I love them. I've met some of the best human beings in my life from that experience. And I'll never, you know, forget it.
Total game changer. And it also does, it reminds me in a much smaller way of kind of like a track meet. Like I threw shot and discus mm-hmm. and you just sit around all day waiting to all do day. A 1 second thing. Correct. In this case, some of these events are like a minute or two, but it really tests your mental fortitude, your focus, your commitment to the process. So
yeah.
It says a lot about your overall character and mental, just the mental piece.
Yeah, big time. I was also so green. I just was so excited. I mean, I just, you know, had a blast. I remember being there and like they would have like somebody cook us omelets in the morning. And I was like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. That guy's going to cook me an omelet. I was like, oh my God. I made it.
You were an incredible, from what I gathered, hammer thrower. And again, like of all the people I've met in life, like actually met, you're the person I think of, like in terms of they might actually have Thor's blood in them. Oh. You know what I mean? You have that, like you have a lot of just natural strength, but also
yeah.
You've trained it too. But like to go from being a bartender to an American gladiator, just like that, you've been blessed. And so you mentioned the ego component. You go from like not really being known to being, like you said, like now you're in the national spotlight, and then unfortunately the show stops. What, cause and then in the original series and then the ESPN documentary, they go into like what it was like to be a household name to then like nobody. And that can do a lot to your mental health. Like, but then you managed to go and go on to The Biggest Loser. But how about that gap in between those two opportunities? What was it like for you?
I mean, the harder gap, I mean, it was definitely a wake up call. Like to me, I thought at 24, I made it, dream job. I think I was making $1,500 a day or two, you know, I was like, I am rich. And when it stopped, I was devastated because, I was like, I'm going to do this for the next forever. And the greater gap was post Biggest Loser. This gap after Gladiators was actually the greatest motivator, because if I had sat on that golden goose egg, like I wouldn't have turned out okay. Like too much fame, too much money, too soon. And the best thing it did was humble me to see what I could do. And it helped me get out of Chicago. I was like, Jenny, you can go back to Chicago and bartend, or you can stay in LA and see what this is about. And just just take a chance on yourself. And like, whether that's fitness modeling or something, like I never wanted to be an actress. That wasn't it. But like, I was like, I got to stay. I got to try. And Gladiators was that opportunity to try. And because my name was out there and I'd done enough, it had gotten me, it gave me enough courage to do it. And then, I mean, the next, 6 years was me personal training. Like I started with group fitness classes and I got into fitness because I needed to pay my rent and I ran out of money really quickly. And if you work at a gym, they give you a free membership. So I was like, okay, this is sweet. And so that first gap was easier for me. Like the post Biggest Loser gap is harder and is more like the Gemini thing. Or what I have seen happen with a lot of professional athletes, because you have these people that have a career, a schedule, an identity, and a flow, and then that ends. It's not like there's this gradual thing. It's snipped. And then you're like, oh, wait a second, everything is different now. And that, and it's like gravity comes in the room. You're floating and then you break the barrier and you're here. And then you have to redefine your day, your thoughts, your worth based on your standards, not based on the ones that were given to you. And that's a lot to do overnight.
Oh, big time. I mean, look, I want to talk about The Biggest Loser next, because again, you actually tried out multiple times.
Yeah.
And then it finally hit. And then, like you said, there's been a gap since. And, you know, I've talked about this before with, you know, the men's health opportunity. You know, you go from reaching millions every day to like, oh, wow, it's kind of crickets out here on your own. Even though both of us are technically the best we've ever been at what we do in terms of mastery and knowledge and experience. But because you were on that pedestal, on that platform, if you get caught in the comparison game of that, it really steals all future joy. And again, you know, the other piece of it too is, you know, we just finished, for the second time through Succession on HBO. Have you watched it?
No, should I?
Oh man. Look, man, it is such, it's my favorite TV show of all time. And
okay.
I watch more TV than I think even the average American. But
okay.
One thing the guy was talking about at the end of it, like, I don't think I'll ever be able to make a show this good again. And he's a young guy. Like, he's got a lot more work to do. Like, but that's okay. You don't have to make multiple masterpieces in life. And I think that's a real thing where we always have to compare ourselves to the younger version of ourselves or that type of thing. But I just want to talk about that because, you know, we're both around the same age. We just turned 40. We're both, old people in a young person's game in some ways. But we'll get to that. Take us through like the process to end up getting on The Biggest Loser. And then we can talk about, you know, post that, cause there's a lot to unpack. And,
well, yeah, I mean, listen, one note on what you said, mastery at something takes a lifetime. And one in that category is a lot to me. Two is insane to master two things. And what happens on the hero's journey, and if you're listening, you should Google hero's journey. You see it in every great film, every epic, right? Cinematic, whether it's Rocky or Braveheart or anything, there's a process that the main character goes through. And what BJ, you and I have lived and discovered is the top is actually not the top. The pinnacle is not the end. And to come through Biggest Loser, and I will talk about that process of getting there and come to the other side, was devastating because working up to it, like, as you said, I was asked to audition multiple times. I didn't get it. Finally, I get it. I crush it. I do the impossible. I'm the first woman to successfully replace Jillian Michaels. Views are doing great. Again, two seasons, just like Gladiators, we get canceled. And yet I'm on my mountaintop and I'm not ready to give it up. I'm like, I want to stay here. I want to be here. And I got very attached to attention, to acknowledgement, to people's acceptance of me, and the awards that provided being in this position. Now, it really clouds your judgment. It really clouds your ability to think with your heart versus your ego. And it really clouds your ability to see friend or foe clearly. And I can't tell me how many people that are not my friends that I thought were my friends. Like you talked about crickets. It has been, It was hard at first and it's been beautiful now. Paring down the people in my life that really love me, really respect me, really look at me as someone that's with mastery. And I'm proud to say that I'm almost 41 because it gives people that are now in this industry like, oh, wait, you're 40? I go, yeah, no, I've been doing it a while. I really like it. You know what I mean? Like people that have been doing like they're influencing for 5 years or 6 years, 7 years. I'm like, oh my God, at 6 years, I was still teaching group classes in the Valley. And you know what I mean? Like, you know, paying my rent better, but not great. You know what I mean? Like a pair of Lululemon pants was a big upgrade for me. So to get on that show and to do that, the only reason I succeeded on Biggest Loser is because I put my people first. I didn't really understand all the camera stuff. I didn't understand production. There was a lot of butting heads with me and my executive producers trying to find what I knew I needed to do to serve the contestants, but getting them what they needed for the show. And it was emotional and it was hard. And it was probably some of the unhealthiest I've been in my life, physically, mentally, spiritually. And to come out the other side, it's funny, you trade all of that mental, physical, spiritual health just to feel like number one. I loved and I got obsessed with how the show separated me from every other fitness person. I'm like, this is the number one fitness show on TV. I am the number one female coach. And I was 10 times better than Dalvet because he never even fucking trained his contestants. It was disgusting. And I was like, I'm the best. And this show tells everybody I'm the best. And that went away. And then I had no way to show people I was the best. And like hearing myself say it out loud is kind of like scary. I'm like, oh my God, talk about being consumed with my own, achievement, my own stuff, and getting off track of why I started coaching in the first place, which was like, I really love people. I love seeing them win. I love working with beginners or helping people get started again. And so Loser was great. And I learned so much in the platform and everything. But after that went off the air and then I moved to Denver, I had like these 4 years to pull away, let the dust settle, really discover who I am, what I wanted to do, and what actually made me happy. Because not having a TV set to go to was very hard. Not having a magazine cover to get ready for made me feel very inadequate and unimportant. And what you realize when you come out of all the bullshit, you realize that, oh, I actually make a difference like me, Jen Wiederstrom does. Not Jenna Wiederstrom on TV, Jen Wiederstrom. Like I have a private app. I only have about 300 people in there. I know everyone's first and last name. I make a difference in their lives and I have never been happier. I don't need a million people following me. I don't need 10 million people watching a show that I'm on. I need to make a difference, like a real difference. And that is what I'm doing now. And I think that if I'm being honest, the only thing I miss about Biggest Loser was that it was such real relationships. It was real change. I'm doing a reunion with all my contestants and next month we all meet up and I see their kids. I see their spouses. We're all still very close. I miss the fact that there could be a camera in the room collecting real experience and conversation, and then they could edit it and cut it and they could share what they wanted. This whole social media thing where I have to record myself and edit it and do it, it takes all of the feeling, all of the charm, all of the love out of coaching that I love the most about coaching. And so it was really nice that I could just be me and my contestants could just be them. And it was just kind of like edited and put out there. And that was the best vehicle for me. So I selfishly miss television being popular. I miss the show for that reason. But I would love to be able to do it again with this perspective and with this humbled spirit, and do it even better, you know, and let the world see that way versus getting people to scroll on Instagram, you know, like that's what I would wish.
You know, I want to follow up on a couple points there. You know, one, I first met you at, it was a Dynamax Medicine Ball Master Trainer event. And again, like I've been blessed to meet some pretty cool people in my journey here, especially when I was at Men's Health. Because again, you know, you work there and you can get anyone's attention. You can get anyone on a podcast. They'll give you the time of day. But you have it. when I met you, there is just, you walk in the room, you're kind of a force of nature. You have an energy, whether, and I don't care what you believe in, whatever that is, it's in you. And when I wasn't a fan of The Biggest Loser, I checked out early episodes, just to see what was going on, like in its early stages. The two seasons you were on, my wife and I watched every episode, and it was, I love to watch someone who is literally put on the fucking planet to do this. You're here to do more, but it's also, by the way, it was a true culmination of your unique physical gifts, but ultimately your personal gifts with people. And the person that they portrayed on television is often not the person behind the scenes, but like, I felt like it really did you justice in terms of how much you cared about the people you were working with. And these incredibly stressful scenarios of like, they're away from their family, you know, in some cases, they're overexercising, they're under eating, like this is a competition. This is part of the job, but navigating them through these incredible rapid body transformations. So again, like, I want you to know, like, you fucking killed it. And
You're making me cry. Thank you.
It's just a fact. Like, cause again, then you see other people do stuff like this and you can tell like whether they're genuinely there for the right reason or not. And you obviously were. And knowing you, it just confirmed everything, seeing you on TV versus off of TV. For those listening, she's the real deal and she's as authentic as it fucking gets.
I believe
the best times are ahead of you still. I do.
Thanks, BJ. You know, I feel it. And it's coming through what I would call like my own confrontation with my ego has been really important because like I even met a girl today. I went to this Nike event and I was like, oh, someone's like, oh, this is Emily. She's got a really big podcast. I go, oh, hi, should I know it? I'll look it up. And she was just curt with me and couldn't give the time of day. And I was like, I'm Jen. Okay. Do you not want to be friends for an hour? Okay. Like I just like, oh, and I wasn't, instead of being angry, I was understanding. I'm like, I've been there. I remember when I was doing good and feeling too cool and it feels good to have come, as I said, on our hero's journey, both you and I at Pinnacle being at the top of our game, arguably, I would say the top of our game in the fitness industry, like what other place is there to go, but like a Men's Health or a Biggest Loser, you know, and to let it all go. And I'll commend you on this. You were one of my first friends that really started to prioritize your own life and your own happiness. And by watching what you've done with your wife has encouraged me to do the same because I sometimes, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I'll admit it to you. I see like these Peloton instructors becoming famous. And I was like, they have no idea what they're fucking missing out on. Like, I know you as a coach and I know me as a coach. And I know a handful of other just rock stars. I'm like, this is nothing compared to the way we fucking used to throw down. Like, and I know you were offered an opportunity to do it. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, BJ could have been like the famous Peloton guy, you know, and what that means and the attention or the deals or whatever. And you chose your life, your wife, your happiness and your health. You moved to the West Coast. Like you find as you go through this world, none of that matters. We need very little money. I always say that if all my clients fired me, nobody wants to learn fitness from Jen Wiedersham anymore, I will bartend again. I will bus tables. I will totally keep the roof over my head, the food in my belly, the lights on. I am not worried because I'm a hard worker and you are too, BJ, but you had the courage to let go of all the shiny shit and build a life that you love. And now like to see you guys like, and you have a pool. Like how many years in Pennsylvania did you not have the life that you knew you wanted? And now you're living it. And it's so exciting to see. And by the way, I'm still helping people be healthy. What about you? Like
I do the best I can. Yeah. I mean, I do the best
exactly.
I can.
Yes. You know, and you're doing it.
Would you describe, God, there's a lot to unpack there. You know,
I know.
So let me start here. And I'll ask you, I personally, and it was accelerated by, so it started to happen when I left Men's Health. And then it just got accelerated through the pandemic, which ultimately ego death is the wrong word because I still retained enough of it to be effective. Like, ego isn't necessarily all bad, right? It helps me keep pride in my work. So I'm not just going to put shit out there just to make money. Right. It also motivates me in, like, you know, like there are certain things that still fire me up because, you know, my foundation is as a competitive athlete. But it really, it sabotaged me in a lot of ways, and it stole a lot of joy in my life. At the same time, I look at that, I guess it was kind of around 35 for both of us, where like all the things came together where like right now we probably have more knowledge. I think we're both, in as good of shape collectively, like overall fitness, maybe not
no doubt
as strong or powerful, but like complete mobile condition, those types of things, but not as motivated. You know, that's been for me the toughest part. I really have to like, I've got to call upon like ancestral fortitude to get through some things or get motivated to do things, because I can't call upon wanting to be famous, wanting to get, acknowledgement, recognition, things that would just get me fired up to do things. Did you kind of go through your version of an ego death after Biggest Loser?
Do you mean motivation to like work out or like to like build projects, to coach? Like, what do you mean?
Honestly, it's kind of everything, because when you're really rolling in anything in life, there's total goal alignment. Like literally everything you do all day long is pushing towards, it's pushing that collective needle forward, right? When you're locked in and things are really rolling, at least in my experience. But when you don't have that total goal alignment, or you're now just at the point now where you've gone this far in something, it's hard to restart anything at any time, but especially as you get older. Because again, we're running on a battery that doesn't really fill up as high as it used to, and it drains faster. And again, we don't have that youthful energy and motivation of making a name for ourselves, especially when you've already kind of made a name. Right. So, and then it's like, so, and then if you're like, oh, well, I'll never be that again anyway, so what's the fucking point? So again, there's a lot of demons you start to battle, and it's really just, honestly, it's just a fight now, looking at the person you see every morning when you wake up in the mirror.
I mean, this is a really pensive question. I see it less as battery and more that we are living in reality. Reality changes the system, because, and I've said this, this conversation has come up recently. I am not impressed with fit influencers doing the videos, or like you see these moms, and I know how hard it is like to recover from anything. I've never had a child. So like the time it takes for like a woman's body to come back to square one is a long process. And some of these moms share their journey, and it's really cool. But I'm less impressed with the fitfluencer who's doing it because she needs content, versus my friend in Chicago that is not posting her workouts, that has three kids under six, that is a full-time, you know, worker, her husband's full-time. Like, that's impressive to me. Us influencers, we gotta post shit. So if it's not record, like, we do it because we need to record something. So there's a back-end pressure built in of have to versus want to and desire. So you were teaching motivation, but we're not operating with it. So it comes from a very different emotional context. And that's why for me, I mean, like from a physical standpoint, I go to a gym, I take group classes. I'm not good working out by myself. I do some, but I'm not great. Like I know who I am and I need that. When it comes to projects, the fact that I have a lack of motivation for them tells me they're probably not for me. I use it as a compass. Like, I'm like, if I'm not excited about this, I'm not doing it, period. Like, I love coaching, but unless I have something to coach about, I'm not going to do it. So like, I'll post these like longer form videos on Instagram that I was told for years would never do well. And I have over 100,000 views on like all of them because I'm teaching cueing about a move, but I'm not someone's like, you need to do this like three times a week. I'm like, are you fucking nuts? No. I can't coach. Do you want me to coach about like the wrist position on a curl? It's not, if it's valuable, if it's real time, if it's something that's come up in my community that I think will help the rest of my community, I'll share it. But anything that feels like I have to, or like, or I should do that, it's just odd. It's out. I'm like, I'm not doing it. And like I said, like I rely on the fact that I'm a really hard worker. So if I get fired from being everyone's coach, I'll do something else. And my only goal is to fall in love, build a family, have great friendships, see more of the world, and like learn about myself and whatever this universe is. Like, that's really it. So to come through all the professional stuff, to come through all the things, I mean, I used to have, even physically, I used to have hair extensions, eyelash extensions, nails, things put on. I was getting tan. It's all gone. You just go through this thing where you take all the layers off. You're like, wait a second, what makes me happy? What really lights me up? Who lights me up? Who do I learn from? Who inspires me? I mean, and honestly, the only reason I like my online community as much as I do, because it really started as an experiment of, can this work? And there can be real relationships built through a digital interface with people I've never met. I have so much fun with them and they give me so much support in my life. So I wake up every day and I can't wait to go on my app. I can't wait to see them. Like, that wasn't like that before. And so unless something feels like that, BJ, you shouldn't be doing it, period.
No, and I agree. There are a certain number of things that just have to get done right now. But I am in that mindset where, more and more, I'm getting closer and closer to, trying to focus on the things that, light me up, but also put me in the position to have the biggest impact.
Sure.
And I'm really happy you're there because it's tough. I mean, like, I was listening to someone the other day talking about how, you know, the human brain from an evolutionary standpoint was never really designed to go past 40 years. Like, you know, once you reach the point where I guess you either have decided to or not decided to procreate, which is around that time, it's like you have to like almost recreate another reason to live. Fitness also exposes other things too, because all of a sudden, like, we can't recover. We have to even tighten up the diet more than normal. We can't get away with as much as we used to. And then physically, it's harder to train the way we used to. We have to evolve our training. Like, so many things happen at once. And by the way, this is happening to regular people too, with busy lives that actually don't have to worry about exercise and diet like for a living. But I've talked at great length on the podcast and solo episodes about this, but I'm just curious your unique perspective of the mindset and how you've evolved everything you do, physical, mental, diet, business, coming to
honestly,
40 now, you know, in your 40s.
I just find for every year I live, I have a new solution. It's adapt, 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 adapt. So for instance, like, I've been really wanting to coach more and I've been working on writing and it's just not coming out that way. Like, I have tens of thousands of words written, but I'm feeling far more verbal. So I started my podcast up again and it's just me. And it's like a guided solo coaching session it's like around 10 minutes long. And that's what I'm doing right now. And maybe in a year I'll be like, I'm not feeling that as much as I was before. I'm going to shift and do this instead, or I'm going to do more speaking events, or I am going to start writing, like allowing it to evolve. With my training, there was a majority of last year where I was just doing a lot more walking, body weight stuff, really healing some things in my shoulders. My knees were feeling off. And then I've come through like 6 months of that. And now I'm like, I'm back to CrossFitting 4 days a week and I feel great. So I think that letting go of permanence is a really important thing to attach to, which is a kind of an oxymoron there. I think I just keep finding new solutions based on what's in front of me. Like, my list of to-dos always changes month to month. I get through things, I experiment, I get feedback from them, then I adapt. I go, experiment, feedback, adapt. So I do that, whether it's my nutrition and my body, what I'm creating, even in my group. Like, my training app is an ongoing R&D experiment. Like, how did this go? I'm trying a workout. I do programming. How'd that feel? How'd that work? We do a book club. I do one that's like funny, one that's emotional. What did it do for the community? I have people that felt a greater change in their overall life because of a book club over my workouts. That's an interesting idea. So I think that the more you do, the more you know. And as long as you're adapting with that feedback, like, that's where I've struck like my happy place. And I've realized that like, that's where I found a lot of peace. Cause as long as I'm doing, I don't feel any suffering. I'm not attaching to an outcome. I don't have an expectation, but I know I'm putting things out there from a very pure place. And I'm waiting to see what happens. Like, this is a really good book that I'm not going to stop reading. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I think from that mindset, it takes the pressure away from it. It take, you know, doesn't make anything too precious. And you just have to say it's, and it's not go with the flow. It's not that, but allowing the current to show you what's working and what's not is important.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, that's, it almost seems like if I look back at, I feel like every time I've approached a new decade, there's some sort of rebuild that's necessary.
Sure.
You know, and I'm still on what is an indefinite rebuild on my body. Just finally taking the time and the patience to just fix old injuries and getting ready to run the race of the next 40 years, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That I wasn't when I was younger. I just couldn't take the time. I had to keep taking the shortcuts for the, you know, whether you're chasing more size or more strength or more money or more fans or more whatever. So again, there is a real wisdom that comes with this, and also cutting all the fucking bullshit, finding out who in your life really matters, and reestablishing new parameters for success. I think that's a big part of it too, is again, if you have poor success parameters, you'll always be miserable no matter how much you do in life. Let's talk quickly before, you know, I don't want to take too much of your time. I also want us to take enough time to promote all the cool stuff you've got going on. Let's talk sauna. Okay. I sent you some recordings. People listen to my podcast.
You did.
Like, this fucking guy, stop talking about the sauna. But I wanted to just get some different perspectives of other people in the space just so they know I'm not crazy. Like there's a way to behave in the sauna, no?
I mean, it's an unwritten rule there. When you have that limited space, when you share space with anybody, sauna or no, there are guidelines that we all know and should be living by. And I don't think that's the experience you're based on what you sent me, not the experience you've had.
Well, I've asked my wife and I'll ask you now. I don't feel like the stuff that's going on in the men's sauna is happening in the woman's sauna.
No, women have, women are already a little bit more shy about their bodies and their sounds out of them. We just are. It's just different. And I don't know if the true nature of women, and I think how we differ the most from men, is we are anticipatory. Women anticipate things, I think, better than men do. So if a woman's like, oh, I might have to toot or something, we get up, we move. Like we feel like we got a belch. We like guys are like, oh, it's happening. Like I don't know if that's the issue, but women like put towels down, they cover themselves up, like they talk quietly or not at all. Like what you've experienced, I don't know if you need to like change or maybe you're putting out the vibe. Maybe they think that you're okay with that. I don't know what's happening.
I mean, I don't know either. I'm at the point now where again, it's a $10 a month gym membership. So what am I really expecting? And then the second piece is, I'm going to save up for my own sauna at some point. But again, like in the list of things that are required, things, you know, once you have a home, especially one that has like a backyard and a pool, like there's just, it's not a full-time, it's a part-time job added to my already intense work list of just maintenance, fixing things around the house, maintaining the house and a sauna.
Yeah, but I can give you a great suggestion on a infrared sauna that'll be really worth your while.
Okay. I'll definitely take a look.
You push the button, it heats up. I mean, I know the barrel saunas are all the rage and they're probably better, but this is fast and easy and I highly recommend it. I'll text you.
I cannot wait to hear about this.
Yeah.
Let's also, I want to ask your question on, you know, you and I started our journeys in this space of fitness at the birth of social media. We are like some of the original online quote unquote trainers.
Yeah.
And then influencers. Now the new thing is de-influencer. I don't know if you've seen that. People that fight against influence or anyway, I almost threw up when I saw that. But again, it's just like we've seen so many trends come and go and there were DVDs and there was streaming. And now we're entering kind of the age of AI. And I did a podcast recently where I literally just asked ChatGPT to make me a BJ Goddor inspired workout that's 20 minutes. And what it spit out in 1 second was startling. Now, look, I'll send it to you so you can see it. I did an email, a newsletter on this, and I did a whole podcast on it. But like, the scary part about it was I know the average fitness consumer will not know the difference between what that machine made in a second. Even just to type it out would have taken me 20 to 30 minutes. But I can see, okay, my people that have been with us a long time, your people, they'll know, okay, this is not like, there's no heart or soul in this, but that's like 1% of the population. What are your thoughts on that? Have you looked into it? Have you started to think about like the fact that you're going to wake up one day and see a digital fake, deep fake Jen Wiederstrom making a workout and selling workouts without giving you a royalty? Like, have you thought about this?
I haven't. I mean, I sure hope that's not what happens. I don't think that can happen. I see everything that's going on in Hollywood with like actors and likenesses and what that whole thing. But I'm in our profession, I'm less concerned, but I also know that we're special coaches because what we provide is a really high level of community and connection. And I was doing a lot of research going in. I had a presentation at a coaching conference back in the spring, and I was doing all this community research, and it talks about how like loneliness, like there's this thing where, and this is all pre-pandemic information, but like if you live in a place where there's air pollution, you're 5% more likely to die sooner. If you're obese, 20%. Alcohol every day, 30%. If you are lonely, you have a 45% chance of dying sooner. Loneliness. It literally, the way your body craves food through hunger and through that mechanism, we feel like, oh, I'm hungry, I should get food, is the same way you crave connection in loneliness. Your body has the same response. So it to me, what people will come to us for is exactly this conversation, that humanness, a camaraderie that can only be found in a living human, not AI. So I think if there are people that don't want to spend money on a trainer, are really at the beginning and don't know what they're doing, and they want to save money and do that, I guess they could. And frankly, I'm just glad that they're doing anything at all. We have a very fat and sick country. So fine, type in Jen Wiederstrom workout and bootleg it. I could give a fuck as long as you start moving. But what's going to really sustain results for people are what we're doing in our own communities and creating a very safe place for people to share and to try and to learn as they go. And to me, that's irreplaceable. So I'm worried. I think AI is like excellent for science and for surgery and for medicine. I'm terrified of what it's going to do for the art community and for a lot of jobs. But for us, I don't know. You can't replace what I offer. I know that.
It's still early too. Like one of the suggestions was, you know, jog in place for 3 minutes. Not that that's a terrible thing to do, but it's just like, if someone has 20 minutes, it's likely not how I'm going to have them start their workout if they're used to the style of things I do. But anyway, you know, it definitely was intriguing. And in a way in which like within a second, they can look at all of your online content and make a proposal that, by the way, like a lot of the movements, I use them in workouts because I then can go through a process where, okay, make it a body weight only workout, make it 15 minutes instead, like where it can keep, like it works with you. So it's intriguing. I'm kind of using it like virtual assistant now.
Yeah. But I kind of laugh when you like, they use a lot of the exercises I use. Every trainer uses like the same 50 exercises because like, that's like, I always joke, it's not rocket science. It's exercise science. There are core movements that work that clients can groove the pattern, get better at, whether they're looking for fat loss or muscle gain or strength or just range of motion and like general health, like 50. And then there's variations on those 50. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Like I don't know. It's all the same. There's something that I was at Summer Strong. It's a sore neck event. And I was trying to explain something to one of the older coaches. He goes, I'm going to stop you. Just show me what you're talking about, and I'll tell you what we used to call it. And it's a really fun way of looking at fitness because you're like, yeah, everything's just everything's the same. Everything's just comes in circles. Philosophy comes in circles. Wellness and fitness comes in circles. You know, social comes. We're all repeating the same shit over and over. So I'm not getting too worried yet, but you know, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no, that's intrigued is a good way to put it.
Yes.
So tell us what you're doing right now, what's going on. Also, like, you know, let's promote some of the cool stuff you're digging into.
Yeah. So, you know, I've had this opening in my life, I'd say the last like 14 months or so, that's been an accident. I think through the pandemic, a lot of people didn't want to train, but I had like some celebrity performing clients that needed to get ready and get back out on the road. So between Amy Schumer and John Mayer, and now I'm with the Grateful Dead with John here on the road right now, you know, I've had this really beautiful opportunity to work with these incredible people that have this reach in what they do. And it feels really exciting for me as like a kid from Lisle, Illinois, that, you know, gets to be a small sliver in their, like the ripple in their day that helps with their performance and how they help people like laugh and enjoy their lives. So like that's happening. But within that sliver of time, I've got all this other time for JW. So I've already talked about my online community, Foriana Daily. I love it. It's a training app that has a book club and a step club, and we have a cooking group, and like we just have the best. We're all going to Las Vegas for the marathon next year. Like we're a really family oriented like group of like people that just have a blast together. I started my podcast again, Small Things in Common, which is just my opportunity to talk about things that have come up that are important. I almost feel like they're meditations, BJ. They're just things to like put in your ears and drive to work with, or like at the start of your workout as you're warming up, just to give you a mindset and an idea. And those are the two things that I'm really focusing on. I've got other things in the cooker, but you know, as far as what's outward facing, that's how I'm really trying to reach people and be available to people. While I'm supported in this kind of existential travel with my clients that are running around and, you know, being there for them while I have a lot of time to service like the things that I also love, like, which is, you know, helping people that are everywhere, the flyover states that are struggling, the people that are scared to start, that are overwhelmed with, you know, health and fitness and the mystery and the fear that lies within that. And I'm working on a documentary as well about this specifically. It's called Healthy Lies, and I'm working on it with Adam Bornstein and our director, Aaron Durham. And it's about, you know, the process, the cycle that we're in where, you know, this marketing industry is a $1 trillion experiment every year. And every year we're more unwell. We have more diets and more supplements and more support than ever, but we're more unhealthy than ever. And part of that is the psychology that goes into marketing. They want you to sign up. They want you to get buy-in, and they want you to fail so you buy in again. And so it's really helping people see, you know, the forest of the trees in what they can count on, what they need to pay attention to with their health, who they should pay attention to, as well as the personal conversations around shame and accountability to start to take some steps in a really good direction for their own health. So it's the healthy lies we're being told. It's the healthy lies we tell ourselves. And so we're in the midst of doing tons of interviews, and it's really fun. But man, it's a juggernaut. So that's another one we're working on.
You know what? I think you're on the right path, because in my opinion, the 20 plus years I've been doing this, the people that have continued to keep going, or especially have made it through the pandemic, which decimated our industry.
Yeah.
They speak and they write, and they have a unique voice, and they have a unique opinion on how it's done. And they add that to the collective in their own very unique way. And you're gifted in both of those realms. So I'm really excited about this podcast. Send me the links. We'll get that in the show notes so we can promote that. And you are welcome here anytime. Anything, there's like documentaries coming out, you let me know. We'll get you on the show.
Thank you, BJ. I could talk to you for another friggin' hour. We could have talked more about saunas than there's so much to ground to cover with you.
No, there isn't. And by the way, like, cause you know, I'm a little introverted, antisocial. So yeah. I don't have a big network. So I like to get, you know, regular guests moving forward. So whether it's quarterly, semi-annually, annually, whatever, right?
Quarterly. You're put me down for quarterly. We won't have to talk about Biggest Loser next time or all my stuff. We can just shoot the shit, but I'm in. I'd love this.
Fantastic. Guys, listen, we gave you over an hour of our time. Do us this amazing favor and just take that beautiful index finger and you go right to the phone and you press that five, that fifth star. I'll take a four, but a five is great. Just a second of your time and a minute would be just a nice little review. And then subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Check out the show notes for everything that Jen is up to. She is the real deal. One of the few people that I've met, like just instantly, I'm like, wow, this is a special person. This is someone that I know I'll be seeing doing great things in fitness, in and outside the gym, frankly, for a long time. I appreciate your time. Love you guys. Peace.